Hi, everyone. I'm David Chadwick. Welcome to this week's HopeCast with my friend, Jen Houston. Jen, thank you, as always, for joining me on this HopeCast.
Oh, it's always an honor. Thank you, David.
Well, this is Holy Week. It is one of the special weeks in all of our Christian lives. And we celebrate Easter this Sunday. And the Apostle Paul, when he wrote in 1 Corinthians 15, Jen has an interesting verse in there about the resurrection that we both want to use today to springboard into our message today about the proofs of the resurrection.
Yeah, it's 1 Corinthians 15, verse 14. And if Christ has not been raised, then our preaching is in vain and your faith is in vain.
Think about that. If Jesus was not raised from the dead, there is no Christian faith. The foundation of the Christian faith is the resurrection. And if the resurrection didn't happen, yet we still call ourselves Christians, we are people most to be pitied. Here's something I want all of our listeners to think about. The resurrection wrote the Bible, not the Bible writing the resurrection. You know, the resurrection caused the church to form. The church didn't form and then preach the resurrection. Before there was ever a New Testament, before there was ever a church, the resurrection occurred. It is the foundation of the Christian faith. And when we're arguing with skeptics out there, and interestingly, the word apologetics really does mean argue, it's from Peter's epistle where he said, always be ready to give a defense of your faith. That word defense is apologia in the Greek, and the word means apologetics. It's giving a defense. It's arguing for your faith. And there are a lot of skeptics out there who think the Christian faith's a bunch of hooey, but we as Christians know that it's not. It is so true because we have facts that help us believe. In fact, the whole idea of Jesus not only existing, but something extraordinary happening in his life that caused this movement of Christianity is validated by extra-biblical sources like the Jewish historian Josephus and other people as well. So, Jen, I want to spend today's HopeCast looking at some of the proofs of the resurrection, and they are plentiful and they are real. Many of them found in 1 Corinthians 15, Paul begins that section of scripture by saying, hey, Jesus appeared to 500 plus people. And it was like Paul was saying, these folks are living folks. And if you want to have this resurrection narrative validated, go talk to them. And he actually lists some of them by name. And some of the names that are listed there are absolutely fascinating. One being Cephas, who is Peter, one of Jesus' disciples. Well, Peter denied Jesus and ran away, and he was fearful of his life being taken in the same manner by which Jesus was crucified. And yet, this cowardly, fleeing disciple becomes a dynamic proclaimer of the gospel and the one on whom Jesus said his testimony would build the entire Christian church. Peter becomes a pillar of the church. Why? Because he saw a resurrected Jesus. Another one that's mentioned by Paul in 1 Corinthians 15 is James. James was the half-brother of Jesus, and he was a skeptic. He didn't believe in Jesus as God's son. And when Jesus was actually doing his ministry, he, among other family members, came to Jesus and said, what are you doing? You're exacerbating the anger of the religious officials and the Romans too. You're going to end up being crucified and dead. Come on home. Return to the carpenter's business. Keep us moving forward. Have a nice little safe life. Please come home. And of course, the one who was begging Jesus to come home because he was afraid he would get killed later becomes the head of the entire Jerusalem Christian church. That's James. What happened? How did he go from skeptic, come home, Jesus, we don't want any part of your life, to totally devoted follower of Jesus and head of the early church in Jerusalem? He saw a resurrected Jesus. The other personal example Paul uses there is Cephas, James, and now himself. Saul, one of the major persecutors of the early Christian church, he was the one who was behind the stoning of Stephen, one of the deacons in the early church in Acts 7. He was the one going to Damascus to try to increase the persecution of Christians there. This Paul was on the road to Damascus, and a heavenly vision of Jesus in his resurrected form appears to him and says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting me? Saul's life is transformed to Paul, his Greek name, and he becomes major persecutor of the church to major proclaimer of the gospel, especially to the Gentiles, traveled all around the world and planted churches that are still in existence today. Because Paul had this dramatic encounter with the resurrected Jesus, we now have the gospel, especially in the Western world today. What happened? Paul saw a resurrected Jesus. So those are three dramatic life transformations that occurred. And Paul, in writing 1 Corinthians 15, is as if he's saying to the people who are reading his work, go talk to them. Here they are by name, 500 plus, and Peter, James, and myself all saw a resurrected Jesus, and their lives were dramatically transformed. I think it's one of the proofs of the resurrection.
Mm. Well, you know, it's interesting as you're depicting each of these people and their experience with their resurrected Christ. I can relate to each of them, and they're real people who also lived and walked. One of my favorites, I think, are the disciples who were walking along the road right after Jesus was crucified, and they were just talking to one another. And all of a sudden, this man comes up and joins their conversation, just talking about Jesus, talking about the Bible, you know, what they called it in that time, the Old Testament, right, is what they had. And their hearts began to burn in them when this man was talking with them. And then all of a sudden, he revealed he was Jesus.
They invited him to dinner, and then the way he broke the bread was the way that they'd seen him break the bread so many times beforehand, and they went, oh, it's Jesus. And then immediately he disappeared. He stepped back into eternity in his resurrected form, and they knew who he was. They ran back then to the other disciples from Emmaus to Jerusalem, some, I think, 10, 15 miles trip, and said to them, we saw the Lord.
And what about when he walked through the wall?
Oh, and appeared to the disciples not once, not twice, but several times. I think, again, it was his ability to step from eternity into this world and then back into eternity. By the way, Jen, I think we're going to be able to do that with our own resurrection bodies as well in the new heaven and the new earth. But that's another subject for another HopeCast. Yeah. An amazing reality that Jesus was trying to show us in his own material, physical, resurrected body. We need to realize that. He's not a disembodied spirit. He is in a resurrected, material, flesh and blood human body who ate with Peter on the Sea of Galilee and in other places as well, which gives me great hope for heaven being a wonderful place where we'll be able to eat food and enjoy it to its full. But again, a material, resurrected body was what Jesus had himself. Now, there have been many different opportunities through the centuries for people to try to come up with fanciful theories to deny the resurrection of Jesus. One came up with the idea that Jesus' body was taken down and the dogs that were at the foot of the cross ate the body, and that's why they couldn't find it, which is just an absolutely ridiculous assumption of what happened. Other people think that maybe the Romans stole the body, but that makes no sense whatsoever. They didn't want that body to disappear. Jesus, on three different occasions, had said to his disciples during his 3.5 years of earthly ministry, the Son of Man must die and must be raised from the dead. So there was that prophecy that they had heard out there. The Romans didn't want that body to disappear. They wouldn't have stolen it. Moreover, when it was buried, they had put a 1-ton stone in front of it, sealed with a Roman insignia, had placed Roman guards in front of it. They wanted that body to stay in the tomb. But an angel, of course, came and rolled it away and allowed Jesus then to come to everyone in his resurrected form. There's also been the theory that the Jews stole the body, but they wouldn't want that body stolen at all. Same reason as the Romans wouldn't. They wanted that body to stay in the grave. Some have suggested the disciples stole the body. And here comes one of the major reasons that some people are skeptics. The disciples stole the body. They wanted to keep this message of Jesus alive. So they took the body, they hid it, and then came up with this idea that Jesus had been raised from the dead and spread that message all throughout the world because they just wanted Jesus' message of love to be maintained. Now, Jen, here's why that's absolutely crazy. Is within years, the disciples started to receive persecution, first from the Jews. You read that in the early chapters of the book of Acts, where they were imprisoned and even martyred, i.e. Stephen in Acts 7. But you also have the Romans eventually coming against the Christians as well. So by the time of the early 60s, Nero, that crazy maniacal emperor, started killing Christians by the thousands, placing them on crosses along the Appian Way in Rome, lighting lighting them up at night so that people could walk the Appian Way and have light by the burning Christians on crosses. Mm. He was a godless reprobate. But here's the point. If there was that kind of persecution and martyrdom for Christians in the early church, why in the world would you make up a story, preach it throughout the land, and then be whipped, beaten, scourged, and even martyred for something that you knew was a lie?
Yeah.
Human nature doesn't operate that way. Mm-hmm. Human nature is self-protective. It will not die for what it knows is a lie. Now, it might die for what it thinks is true, but it is really a lie, like driving airplanes into the Twin Towers in New York City, and that will allow you to go to Nirvana, to heaven, and have 73 virgins. That's not true. You may think that's true, but that's a lie. But these guys in the early church knew that Jesus had been raised from the dead, and they would not have died for what they knew was a lie. Mm-hmm. You just don't operate that way in life. All I can tell you is, if I had been one of the early church disciples, the first whip that bit into my back, the first drop of hot oil poured on my skin, the first nail put into my hands because I was a follower of Jesus and I would be crucified as he was crucified, I would have cried out, "Just kidding. Made it up. It's not true." I mean, that's human nature. It's self-protective. It doesn't die for what it knows is a lie. And to me, that's one of the dramatic proofs of the resurrection, along with many others. If I can mention two others real quickly, you have 1,500 years of Jewish tradition of following the Shabbat, the Saturday worship of God. Well, suddenly, within a few weeks, that Saturday day is changed to Sunday. Why? Because the early church celebrated the resurrection of Jesus, which happened on a Sunday, as their worship day. The Jews celebrated the Passover celebration every year for 1,500 years practically. Well, in one brief moment, suddenly the Passover becomes the Lord's Supper, a dramatic something that Christians celebrate solely and no longer the atonement of the Passover. So why that change? Why that sudden change of almost 1,500 years worth of tradition? Unless something dramatic happened, people had seen a resurrected Lord and knew that not only proved Jesus' divinity, but also needed to be honored in special ways in the early church.
Mm. Wow, this is all so compelling. And the thing that's running through my mind right now is when Jesus said, "Blessed are those who haven't seen." And that's us. We haven't seen his resurrected body, but we are blessed for our faith and belief in the disciples' testimony of seeing him firsthand.
Exactly. You know, Thomas sometimes gets a bad rap, in my opinion. He was the one who, in his own fear or thoughtfulness, wasn't there the first time with the disciples when Jesus appeared. But he came back the second time, and they told him what happened, and he said, "Unless I actually touch his hands or his side, the spear that went into his side, the nails in his hands, will I believe?" And then suddenly Jesus appears. Mm. Now, interestingly, Jen, there's no evidence that Thomas ever touched any of those places on Jesus' body. In fact, he looked at him and fell to his knees and said, "My Lord and my God." One of the proofs of the divinity of Jesus is Jesus received Thomas' worship. He let him worship him. I mean, the angels in Revelation, when John started to fall to his knees and worship them, they said, "Get up. We're creatures. We're not worthy to be worshiped." Jesus received Thomas' worship. But here's the point I want to make. At least Thomas came back to be among the disciples to talk about his doubts, his faith struggles, and Jesus then appeared to him. So doubt isn't a bad thing if it drives you to find answers. And I think Thomas found those answers, and the legend has it that he went to India and planted the church there. If you go to southern India around the Madras area, even today, you have the Church of St. Thomas, which has literally thousands of followers to this day. He was martyred there, thrown off a high tower because of his faith in Jesus. But again, another proof that he was willing to die for what he knew was true. He would have never died for what he knew was a lie.
Wow, this is so good. And I just want to land this real quick with the very real truth that Jesus is showing up in people's dreams, specifically Muslims, and they are being saved through this encounter in their dream with Jesus.
A resurrected Jesus who's still appearing mostly to Muslims in the Mideast who cannot have access to the gospel. So God says, okay, leaders, you won't let me have access to them through the airwaves, for example. I'll appear in dreams and visions to them. And he's doing it by the thousands. The fastest growing church in the world right now, Jen, is in Iran and Afghanistan.
Wow.
Muslim countries where Jesus is appearing in his resurrected form to people there, and they're coming to faith in him.
Amazing. My faith is growing right now just hearing about this, all these testimonies of Jesus.
It's wonderful. And those who are mostly leading the church are women, but that's another subject for another day. Dear friends, Jesus is alive. Trust him today. The resurrection is true. And when you worship this Sunday and all Sundays, realize Jesus is alive. That should give your heart hope. I'm David Chadwick along with Jen Houston. Look forward to talking with you all next week.